what on earth is that?
It's a Journey into Comics Network production!
The following podcast, scheduled for one fall, is for the Journey into Wrestling Podcast Tag Team Championship.
J.I. Joe!
Saddle! Miedo!
Because the war horse will fight until he breathes his last breath!
I got the whole damn world in my hands!
Your arms are just too short to box with God!
You just made the list!
But the man is back.
Daddy's home. Ricky ain't about just taking titles. I'm about taking this up to another level that you never seen before.
I'm a wildfire burning across the countryside. I am Napalm Death.
Welcome to Villain Enterprises!
No family, no country, no entity. All pro wrestling.
No more questions about that damn house.
What's up, WrestleManiacs? Welcome back to another episode of Journey into Wrestling. It's season 5, episode 5, five-time podcast champ Nate here, along with my five-time co-host, the king of the pod ring. Welcome back yet again, Buckles. How's it going?
Yeah, the prodigal son has returned, at least for 1 week off, so I am back, yeah.
Thank you for returning. I did my best when you were gone. I hope the episode wasn't shit.
It sounded good from what I could tell. I thought you did a fine job.
Okay, well, when I'm by myself, it's really just me with my own thoughts riffing as quickly as I can and hopefully not repeating myself too much. So not having you to bounce stuff off of was really interesting. I haven't, like I said at the beginning of last week's episode, I haven't exercised that talent of solo casting a wrestling podcast. And I think season...
I'll say, oddly enough, three, I've actually solo casted the wrestling podcast more recently than you had.
Yeah, up and until that point, that is very true. You covered for me just, was that in this season or was that last season, the end of last season?
It was last season. It was right around it was actually around the turn of the year, I want to say. Was the first time, I don't know if it was the last time, I know it was the first time, the Wrestle Kingdom rundown was all me.
That's right, you did a great job. I'm just going to give you a pat on the back for that one. But anyways, man, today we're here. We've got a lot of stuff to dive into, talk about. You've got an amazing list we're going to be getting into at some point today in the episode. But I'm just going to kick it to you, keep it real. Where do we begin with the wrestling world where we left it last time?
Where we left it, let's see, in the span of the last week. Well, I mean, really, where I left is a little different than where you left it since I was gone last week. So I would say, let's see where we left off last week. Where were we at last Wednesday? And I'm having to jog my memory. The sad thing is that last Wednesday, given the state of the world that we live in right now, feels like it was about 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It does.
Like, for me personally, my life's been all over the place in the last 5 days and in kind of the last... Well, I should last 7 days, but then the world has kind of gone on its own little topsy-turvy way in the last few. So, I mean, really, I've even watched wrestling, and like watching Monday Night Raw was 4 days ago, and it feels like I can barely remember the show at times.
We're experiencing days like Nevada counts votes.
Uh-huh. Thank you for getting the reference.
It takes us way longer than it should. No one fucking understands why.
Let's look back at let's look back at AEW last week, first off.
Well, hold on. I was going to actually quickly, because I think the most shocking news from last week is something that you and I didn't even talk about. Serena Deeb is the NWA Women's Champion.
Right. And now we're going to see a defense of that tomorrow night.
And that leads us into where you were going anyway. So let's kick it off.
No. Bam. I was just going to say, that was just a comment about it. But no. Yes, Serena Deeb wins the NWA Women's Championship off of Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa, who is now rumored to be courted by a couple of different places, but has a really interesting take on her free agency, which I'd love to get to here in a moment.
Please.
And then we also have Allison Kay, former NWA, I guess you would call him superstar. I hesitate to call wrestlers.
She was a woman champion. She was champ before Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa beat Allison Kay for it.
I hesitate to call wrestlers superstars when they're not associated with WWE for some reason.
I think that's fair.
But, former NWA wrestler and champion Allison Kay will now be challenging new champion Serena Deeb at Full Gear tomorrow night.
It's a weird fucking dance, though, Buckles. Can we talk about how weird this dance is? Because Serena Deeb is NWA Women's Champion, signed to AEW. Allison Kay is now a free agent leaving NWA, challenging for a title that she only lost to Thunder Rosa, who just lost. There's a lot of different threads going on in this that make it really interesting.
Thunder Rosa, who is also a free agent and has also wrestled on AEW.
Well, and actually, let's talk about Thunder Rosa's free agency because you said you wanted to get to it, but, you know, Billy Corgan himself said that she's not a free agent. That's totally false. She's still working for the company until 2021. Yeah. And I was like, oh, see, you guys are wrong. And then I was like, wait, 2021 is like a month and a half away.
Right.
Who the fuck are you kidding?
When speculation went around, when she lost the title, people thought she was dropping it to go to a different promotion, whether that would be WWE or whether that would be AEW. And a lot of people immediately, the first thing that people think most of the time is WWE, especially because, you know, even in the era where they're cutting people left and right and, you know, protecting profits, whatnot, they're still, you know, buying up talent like it's going out of style. But she put out a tweet afterwards saying that, no, I'm not a free agent. I am still under contract with NWA for another year. But she says what my decision-making process has to do a lot with her MMA career. She wants to continue doing her MMA stuff. And she even made reference to WWE having control over wrestlers' outside interests, you know, i.e. Twitch and streaming and the like, as having an effect on her thought process because she doesn't want to go someplace where she's not going to be able to do what she wants outside of their property.
Well, and listen, meaning, like, there'd ever be any question she wouldn't stick with AEW, who I think elevated her where she needed to be.
Well, I mean, even if I wouldn't even say elevating is, you know, playing a factor in it so much as if she goes to WWE, there's a chance that she wouldn't be allowed to do the MMA type stuff, whereas in AEW there is, Jake Hager is a great example where she can.
Yeah, that is true. Another thing I think is interesting is that, you know, you can look to other female superstars that have been explosive international level talent that have been muddled in the WWE waters. Asuka is an example. Kairi Sane is an example. I mean, we could literally sit here and just riff for 20 minutes on different names that have been underutilized once they got in WWE. And I just do not think Thunder Rosa can afford to get muddled. She needs to take this momentum she has from, one, being an amazing surprise winner of the NWA title, which was a cool thing when she did beat Allison Kay, and that crazy storyline they had going with Melina coming back and everything. And then, of course, COVID happened, so that whole company kind of had to go on pause mode. But here we are, and Serena Deeb, champion, now challenging, or having Allison Kay challenge her free agent. It's very, very interesting. It's like the highest level tryout you can get for a company.
It really is, and to see her as the pre-show match, it's kind of disingenuous because you don't really think there's much reason to think that Allison Kay is going to come away winning the title at this point.
No, but I think what they're going to do is build her up to look really good, and that's going to give you sometimes winning the title. Listen, sometimes the rub of the gold isn't what you need to go over. Sometimes it's a moment. It's a connecting with the crowd where you were on your last fucking breath and you still wouldn't give a. The best example of this is fucking Jeff Hardy Undertaker.
Oh, I know. I completely agree with you. I think the question is, is this a trying to build Allison Kay up so she can, you know, make a bigger name in the indies? Is this trying to build Allison Kay up so she can go back to NWA and be the conquering hero later on once NWA kind of resumes? Or is this building Allison Kay up to have a prominent spot in signed with AEW?
Well, AEW needs her. I'm just being honest.
Well, very much so. That's, I think that's the, of the three that I just mentioned, I think that's the one that needs to happen the most. You could put her in a feud with Hikaru Shida right now, and I'd be more interested than I am in their current feud. That women's division is sorely, sorely lacking, and we've talked about it before. Veteran presence and veteran experience in the ring. Name value as well. And a consistent presence, I guess, would be another way of putting it, too. And Allison Kay brings all of those three things to you, or all three or four, however many that was. But yeah, Serena winning it on her own. Like, even Serena winning the title is noteworthy because she's not an NWA star.
Correct.
She's under contract with AEW. I mean, that alone is noteworthy.
Leads me to an interesting other thought.
What's that?
Okay, so Thunder Rosa, Serena Deeb had this really great match. I'm pretty sure it was on Dynamite, right? Was it on Dark? It was on Dynamite.
It wasn't Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa. It was Serena Deeb and, oh hell, I don't remember who. Because Serena won.
I'm pretty sure Serena and Thunder Rosa had a match, because that was Thunder Rosa's debut match in AEW was against Serena.
Oh, right. Sorry, I'm thinking more recently.
Okay.
Serena had another match that she won after having signed with AEW.
Sure. But
that's who I can't recall it was.
So kind of to go back to the Serena, you know, Thunder Rosa thing, they saw enough in that match that they went, okay, we care about Billy Corgan's product. He is a great, I don't want to call him like a farm league version, because they have their own vibe and their own spice, and I've said many times on the show how much I love NWA. But right now they are stagnant. And to get people talking, Serena Deeb taking the title away from Thunder Rosa allows her to now, if she's getting ready to get up for a fight, she doesn't have to hold on to that gold and have this whole like, oh, I'm another champion going into this actual combat sport and play this game. She can focus. It's not bullshit. And then Serena Deeb, her winning is a shock. It's her first title. She's a journeyman wrestler. She's been in all the different companies, indies, the whole nines. And it keeps the name value of NWA sizzling. So like what you said with Allison Kay and her position, right now, we actually really don't know what's going to happen. I think that's what's really great about this specific setup. And I love that we're starting here.
Right. And honestly, I just remembered who it was that she fought recently, because she did defend the title, the NWA title on Dynamite.
Just last week. Yes, she did. Yeah, I can't remember what her name was.
It's legit Layla Hirsch.
Layla, that's right.
Someone I mentioned before and who you will be hearing about later in the show.
You texted me to check her shit out.
Yes, I did.
I remember.
Who I really want AEW to sign as well. Serena had a match defending the title on Dynamite. So it's kind of standing reason that you're going to see, I guess, a partnership going forward between NWA in whatever form the NWA still has at the moment or will have going forward, and Dynamite or and AEW. And I read something today, ironically, that said Cody really appreciates that partnership and really likes the partnership, although he doesn't think that he has another match in him with Nick Aldis anytime soon. Like, he thinks that story is pretty much where it needs to be.
That's fine. I don't want him to have a match with Nick Aldis. Here's what I want. Yeah. And I've done it a couple times now, Buckles. I've done it a couple times now with Cody having this TNT title he defends all the fucking time. I've said, like, oh, OC should be the challenger. Oh, this should happen. All these different things. Honestly, I'm here for a Cody Rhodes, which we can call him that now, Trevor Murdoch match.
That would be interesting. I'll give you that. I, truthfully, the names from NWA, if I want any of them coming over to, because really the names that you would see in NWA, other than Aldis, I don't even know who's still left. But the name that sticks out to me the most, I have to blank on for a second, is Eli Drake, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's who
I'd love to see come over to AEW.
Yeah.
Even if it's just in a guest role. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other names that I can even think of from NWA, from Power, you know, holdouts would be, you know, the Aaron Stevens, which I, you know, sure, as a comedy get, whatever. James Storm's back with Impact now.
Yeah.
Kingston's already with AEW.
So is Ricky Starks.
Yep, Ricky Starks as well. Tim Storm, maybe.
Okay, Tim Storm would be fun. I think another journeyman Storm. Has a great story.
I could
story.
See Tim Storm popping up and having some like a recurring story on Dark or something.
Mama Storm's baby boy. It would be good. It'd be good to give him some use. Another name or another a group of names that would be interesting to add would be the Dawson brothers.
True. I always forget about them because I truthfully don't know much about them.
I really started to enjoy them kind of towards the end of watching the NWA stuff before everything broke out, because they were, you know, tagging together and really brooding villainous heels. And then they got into the tournament for the, what title? It was the
TV title, I do believe.
The TV title tournament, correct. And ended up having to face each other. And they told a really compelling story, and I was really about it. So they hooked me.
Just for me personally, most of the folks that were in the reboot of NWA, I've had a familiarity with. Like, I at least had heard of them or, you know, seen something of them in the past, even someone like a Tim Storm or an Aldis. But those two in particular, I had no real knowledge of. The two of them, Zicky Dice and Question Mark, a.k.a. Josephus, I was not familiar with any of them.
I think Zicky might come over to end up or to AEW soon too, on a little hot tip. Not to say that just because they can game together means that everything's gonna be like definitely, but I noticed that the AEW crew is very clicky. And Brandon Cutler and company play games with each other, and it's like Excalibur and it's Evil Uno Colt and Leva and Nyla, and anyways, recently Zicky was in a couple of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting. And then even more recently, Brody King was in a couple of those games.
That one kind of stuck out to me. I will say there's one name you probably won't see getting signed by AEW as a quick little jaunt. Somebody that you won't see signed to AEW because he's reportedly, as of Halloween, been offered a contract, or I guess he's signed a contract, but there's some caveats to it, which may or may not be kayfabe.
Okay.
Danhausen has finally signed with Ring of Housen.
Oh, great.
Announced on Halloween, Danhausen signed with Ring of Honor. Now, the caveat in his announcement was that he, in order for his official signing to take place, he has to win a Ring of Honor match in the year 2020, which he has thus far been unsuccessful in.
That's very
but
nice.
To me,
very
that feels
evil.
More kayfabe than actual contract status. So,
hey, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You get that awesome video on our Twitter. That's at JIW on JIC. There's that awesome video of Warhorse and Danhausen talking. Does Warhorse say Warhausen?
Yes. Yes, he does.
He introduced them as their tag team. Okay, because I didn't catch that till like last night, really late, when I just happened to click onto our Twitter and then the video played, and I was like, he said Warhausen, and I never noticed that before. Holy shit.
Yep. And I'm going to make a really quick aside here. We're kind of ping-ponging around and really jumping around to different things, but there's something that I wanted to, if I'd have been on last week's show, I was going to talk about then. I haven't had an opportunity to until now. But you bring up Warhausen, I am contractually obligated and morally duty and honor bound to mention the Warhausen comic that I am now owner of.
glad you remembered, because I had to save that, you know,
for you. No, in all seriousness, I came across early last year, or late last year, I should say, a gentleman who was doing a Kickstarter-based Danhausen and Warhorse comic book, and jumped on the Kickstarter, and I finally got my copy of it a couple weeks back. I guess it was a week or so ago, and it is awesome. If you get a chance, follow Warhausen on, you can look him up on Twitter. There's a link there. I will try to retweet a link to it as well, so you can get your own copy of it, but it is fantastic. Fun drawn. Alley Cat has another starring role in it. Dan the Dad has a postscript, kind of a separate storyline after the fact. It's wonderful.
Awesome.
And even in the thank you notes, Journey into Comics got a little bit of a shout out as well. Journey into Wrestling, I should say.
Journey into Wrestling did, yeah. Because yep. I'll say, JIC did not. But you were really gracious and in your backing of that, decided to put us as the name to have included, which was really great. And I'm, as your co-host, really grateful for that, because that's really cool. We also got tweeted and had a little interaction with those guys. It's awesome. The art looks definitely really good. I can't wait to check it out.
Yep, super cool. It's really fun. It's very tongue-in-cheek. Part of it actually takes place in Warhorse's brain. It gives you somewhat of an origin story for Danhausen being possessed by a demon. It's great. But I'm conditioned to say that anything that Warhausen does, anything that Warhorse or Danhausen does, I'm going to enjoy. So,
hey, man, that's how people get over it, because they actually build real fans they actually enjoy and can... You know?
I'm going to say that if they'd have to fuck up on a Jericho level for me to get annoyed with them at this point.
A Jericho level, you say? Yikes.
Yeah.
It's okay. He was wrong, and the whole United States told him he was wrong.
Yeah, he did. He did. And they did. But Jericho, it's more learning that you never want to meet your heroes. You never want to, you know, learn what your heroes are actually like sometimes.
It's true.
And Jericho's very quickly burning through a lot of goodwill.
Oh, yeah. Going
with AEW, do you want to just jump into the build for Full Gear?
Yeah, I think we should kick this one up to Full Gear.
Now, I have to say again, because my sense of time is completely off kilter at this point. Was last week the Dinner Debonair? Or was that 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago. Well... Yeah, 2 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah.
Last week was after Dinner Debonair. There was the town hall. And then this week was just the explosion of MJF showing how heelish.
A nice spear over the desk, as it were.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I do want to remark on the Dinner Debonair, since I wasn't available to comment on it last week. That may be my favorite, you know, televised segment of the entire AEW.
No, hey, Buckles, let me save your life a little bit here, dog.
What's that?
We actually covered Dinner Debonair right after it happened.
Oh, that's right. I apologize. You and
I know, I know. The whole timeline of this show the past few weeks has been totally fucked. I'm going to try to just help wiggle us together through it. No, we haven't talked about the town hall. I didn't cover it last week because I think I recorded right before that.
I unfortunately can't comment much on the town hall because I missed it.
Honestly, lackluster. The only thing that marked me out was the fact that fucking Bischoff showed up again.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I actually missed a significant chunk of Dynamite last week because of having internet issues.
Damn it.
So that's always fun. This week we got straight into the now they're coming to blows. They've gone from dancing. Now they're coming to blows, where Jericho accused MJF of being soft, essentially. Not having a killer instinct, so MJF speared Jericho out of the announce desk for all intents and purposes. It was a wonderful little televised spot, actually.
Yeah, it felt authentic, I think is the way to say it. It felt like even the people at the desk didn't know that that was going to be the spot that happened, and that Jericho didn't really know what MJF was going to do to him, but he knew they were going to do something, and it was just... fluid and in motion. It looked really good. It played really well on TV. There was a lot of drama to it. The pulling off of them. I love that there's really heat between a lot of the members of the Inner Circle and MJF.
What do you think the end game is here? Like, who do you think wins on Saturday?
Oh, that's a hard question. So, honestly, if we're thinking about this logistically, okay, who gains what from what? Does Jericho gain anything from beating MJF? No.
He gains his first pay-per-view win of the year.
Well, okay, sure. That's great, but that's not something you're going to write in the history books.
No, but I'm saying from a booking standpoint, that's something you got to keep in mind.
Sure. That's a good thing to have in mind. Okay, so...
But in kayfabe, he gains the knowledge that he is keeping the Inner Circle strong and keeping the weak-blooded out of it, I guess.
Okay, right, I like that. Like, if you can't take out the lion, you don't deserve to be in the pack.
Could be. Or you could also just look at it as he's just stroking his own ego and giving himself more reason to stroke his own ego.
But now let's look on the flip side of things. What do you give it to MJF, who is one of your top heels, who is the Dynamite Diamond Ring holder, which they never do a fucking thing with or talk about.
Right.
He just has everybody kiss it, so it's more of a gimmick and less of a thing. You have him, he's challenged for title after title. He went the limit with Cody in an amazing match. I mean, you've given him everything, but he's still not, at least to some people's opinions, top tier. So how do you do that? I think that you're going to have him beat Jericho, but it's going to be a dirty fucking win. And everyone's going to be like, oh. So then it's almost like the whole idea of a recount is like, does this guy legitimately deserve to be in the Inner Circle since he kind of fucked over the man? And then Jericho almost has to go to bat for him and go, well, yeah, of course. We're bad guys. That's what we do.
Well, I'm just going to throw this out there that they've already done a political, you know, campaign angle with MJF. Given the current state of the world, I want nothing to do with anything involving recount angles.
I was just using it as a tongue in cheek example. Obviously.
No, I get what you're saying. I couldn't let that one pass. Sure. No, I think there is definitely more storyline to be gained from having MJF win, whether that's dirty or not. I do like the idea of him kind of, in a sense, cheating to get in because, A, you're right. You do have heels doing heelish things, and heels would appreciate that. However, there's also some mileage you can get from being the member of the Inner Circle that they don't want in there to begin with, but
true,
they're obligated to have in. So you get some mileage out of that, too. I don't think it'll be a dirty win. I think he'll get a clean pin on Jericho, or as clean as a heel can get. I think he'll legitimately join the Inner Circle for a moment in time, but I think the end game here is to have MJF supplant Chris Jericho as the leader of the Inner Circle.
Which could be really interesting because then you can get the MJF, and again, don't know how many people have watched the really older episodes of Being the Elite when MJF first got introduced. That's like really the prime time of when I started watching was when MJF first got introduced. And his character is really interesting, and they played that on Dynamite, but I don't think to the same level because you can't, where he was really friendly and buddy-buddy to Cody, but as soon as the cameras were gone, he was like, that dumb fucking son of a bitch has no idea.
Right.
But then as soon as Cody walked back in the room, it was, hey, pal, and like an instant switch.
Oh, yeah.
So we haven't seen that level of maniacal from him. And within a group where he can literally rot them from the inside out, have Santana and Ortiz not trusting each other, have Sammy maybe questioning if he even should be a wrestler. There's a lot of different angles you can play with him essentially
What I kind of see happening is him getting in and taking somebody out. Now, that could be him taking out Jericho and supplanting him as the leader. If he does, then I think the only person that he's trying to rot from the inside would be Jericho because he'll want the rest of the team around him. Like, he doesn't want Santana and Ortiz to dislike him because he wants them to have his back. That's the whole idea. So I think you might see him trying to worm his good graces with them rather than with Jericho. Like, you know, tried to butter up to Jericho to get in, but I think once he's in, he'll butter up to the rest of them to try to turn them from Jericho to him. Or you see him go in and you see a face turn out of somebody like Sammy Guevara instead.
See, and that could be a really, okay, so, and that's another thing that could happen and we haven't talked about is what if Sammy kind of begets the entire Inner Circle with a face turn and they reject, like, even Jericho's like, wow, this is not right. You don't fit. Like, this doesn't fit. And then maybe they have to have a second match where Jericho's like, now if I beat you, you're out of the Inner Circle.
Could be.
And then, you know, Sammy has this bit, because that's something we haven't seen yet with the year and change of Jericho in the Inner Circle is a face version of them. And I'm not saying that in this world of X's and O's, everything is black and white, but it just would be an interesting change for that group to have more of a good guy, buddy vibe.
I think the you get a face turn out of the Inner Circle as a group, not necessarily as, you know, MJF infiltrating and turning them face or anything like that. I think it's more of they will turn face on their own just for goofy purposes, kind of like what I kind of foresee Undisputed Era on NXT doing. In my mind, you have MJF join the Inner Circle for one of two reasons. Either he is going to take over the Inner Circle entirely, or he's going to try to take over and either A, get kicked out, or B, start his own second faction.
Ooh, like NWO Wolfpack.
But in a way,
MJF's Dick Jack. I don't know what you call it. That doesn't sound right.
I can see him starting a takeoff on the MLW Dynasty faction for all intents and purposes.
Now, could he use Dynasty since it was...
It's still a gimmick in MLW, so I doubt he would or could, but it would be something very similar, I think.
Okay.
And let's not also discount the fact that there's going to be a face turn from Wardlow at some point.
Oh, it's coming.
They've teased it already.
They are drilling. You know what? Maybe that's the X factor we're not expecting now.
Could be.
Maybe Wardlow. Oh my. Okay. So here's my what if. What if Wardlow interferes with MJF in the match? Like, let's say MJF's going to use the Dynamite Diamond Ring to punch Jericho. Wardlow stops him. Jericho hits the Codebreaker, pins him. And then it's like, you know, you were going to cheat to beat me. You don't deserve to be in the Inner Circle. And then he looks at Wardlow and goes, but you. And then in one moment, you can face turn two people and really a group all at the same time.
I think you have a more of something of maybe MJF, you know, uses Wardlow's help to get into the Inner Circle and then just turns around and says, well, I've got the team now. I don't need you anymore.
Okay.
Or, you know, they've teased with the number one contendership tourney that Wardlow agreed when MJF said that, you know, what you win, I own too. So at some point you can have him snap based on that as well.
Ooh, yeah.
That's more of a traditional face turn, though.
Ooh, yeah, dig it!
So there's a lot you can do with that, and that's just for one match. Here's the thing about Full Gear that's kind of weird to me is Jericho and MJF probably have one of the better builds, but this is on paper not one of their stronger pay-per-views to me.
Doesn't look like one of their strongest, but I think they have a lot of dream matches kind of that are the expectation is high and they're going to deliver.
Do they really? Like, it's
Omega match. It's going to deliver.
Yes. Like the Kenny FTR Omega Hangman match.
Bucks match will deliver.
I'm not sure.
I think so.
I'm not as sure as I once was. What do you want to talk about more? Do you want to talk Kenny and Kenny and Omega first? Kenny Omega Hangman first? Do you want to do the Bucks FTR first?
Bro, you tell me where we're going. I'm just along on
the So on I think the train. the ones that doesn't have a whole lot of doubt to it is Omega Page. That's got the long build. That's really going to be the singles match where we're seeing the re-debut of the Cleaner. I think that's going to be the best match of the night, truthfully. I think that's going to be the match that steals the show. The storyline's been built for well over a year now and built well, and it may not be anywhere near over. You and I have talked about where they're going with this for a while and where we think they're going with it, where we think that you know, who's going to be number one contender. I still think it's going to be Omega. But the Bucks and FTR feud doesn't have the time of build. It doesn't have the quality of build. And now with the report that Matt Jackson may or may not be legitimately hurt, I'm worried about the match quality. And just kind of breaking it down, the build, you know, 2 years ago, everybody wanted to see the Revival and the Young Bucks go at it. That's the dream match. You're right. It's absolutely a dream match. However, FTR, since coming to Dynamite, really hasn't had a standout match. Like, their magic is kind of not there. Even with Tully Blanchard, they're just kind of another tag team in a sea of great tag teams. They don't really stand out all that much, and that's sad because we know they're capable of great stuff. Maybe it's just that they didn't have the right dance partners, and, you know, maybe the Bucks are. But from a storyline standpoint, they're really not all that interesting anymore.
I will say one thing that kind of bums me out about FTR is they dropped their gimmick idea like 1 week after doing it.
Which was?
They had that whole like 20 minutes with greatness or whatever.
Yeah, the brush with greatness thing. Yeah, that didn't go anywhere.
And if they would have kept up with it, I think it could have been great. Like, I feel like this is where, here's one instance, and we need to break it down and be real. There's not going to be a moment where AEW steals a WWE talent where they're always going to be 100% happy. It just doesn't work.
True.
You can't please everyone all the time. And I think that FTR is already a hard to please group. I think that they might have done, and this is my personal opinion, I think they might have done a little bit better going to New Japan, where they could do a little bit more strong style and a little bit more aggressive wrestling and really break themselves into a larger, different market than what they've been tapped into for so long.
I feel like if they'd have gone to New Japan, they have a better chance to tell the type of stories they want to.
Exactly.
Because the gimmick that they want, to be is that throwback Smash Mouth old school style, which fits great with Cody, but doesn't really jive with anything else that AEW does. Nothing else that AEW does outside of Cody and his, you know, his boner for the WCW and the Crockett days. Nothing else screams old school. I mean, you have Arn and you have Tully hanging around, but everything else is modern. Everything else is for essentially purposes, is millennial. It's the new era of wrestling. And FTR stands like a sore thumb and not in the way that they want to.
Hold on. Apparently something is playing on my computer that's off. I don't really understand that. That was cool. I just had to turn the volume off on a computer that was off. That was amazing.
So really, you get this weird thing where their personality doesn't stand out because they're not designed to. And their match quality hasn't been that great because really they're just not gelling with anybody.
I know what it is.
What's that?
The X factor is the lack of full-blown crowd. FTR operates better when they can actually piss people off and work off that energy. They don't have a crowd's energy to fully fuel their heelish ways. I mean, that you have to have that.
I'm gonna give you a hot take real quick here.
Sure.
And ask you a question that in their time as a tag team together. And I like FTR. I really do think they're a great tag team. But how many teams have they had really, really great matches against?
So, I mean, honestly, three right out of the gate stick out in my head.
I can think of two, but I can't think any more past that.
Okay, so DIY.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down in NXT, some of the best matches those teams
had.
Period.
American Alpha.
FTR, it was the Revival at time, the New Day.
See, I disagree there.
I think they worked amazingly with the New Day because it was opposite the style that New Day works. I thought it worked well.
Okay, here's the thing. When you think of the Revival, you don't really think of their main roster stuff. You think of NXT. That's DIY Feud. That's American Alpha Feud.
American when Alpha they went was the to, other one, yeah.
When they went up to WWE, yeah, they feuded with New Day, but they barely had any matches against them.
They won the tag titles off of them at least one time.
They won the tag titles off of them, but there wasn't a long feud.
Fair.
There wasn't a ton of matches because they kept getting hurt. There was never a really drawn-out huge feud. And then when they got back from injury, they went straight into the company. You went straight to the Usy Hot and shit like that. So,
I would also say that the Hangman Omega chemistry, even though we didn't get a lot of it against FTR, was really good.
Right. Well, I mean, again, you have great wrestlers, but they didn't really have that great quality of match. They didn't have a great chemistry in the match themselves. The only time they really had really great the matches that we put FTR on a pedestal for are the DIY and the American Alpha matches. So my question and my hot take is, are we really seeing that FTR is that good of a tag team, or are we really seeing that they are a great or a decent tag team that had great chemistry with those other two?
I mean, I think time will tell. I think this weekend is going to give us a
big question of that, because the dream match that we all had coming out of NXT was them and the Young Bucks. So are we going to get the FTR of old, the revival of old, against the Young Bucks of old? I don't know that we are.
I think it's possible.
If that match does not live up to the quality that we want it to, how bad is it going to look for both teams?
Well, and the company as a whole. Because they gambled pretty hard on this.
The company as a whole, and I don't even think they've gone very far. They've only had them like really feuding for a little while. It seems like FTR has been in the company for a few months, but it feels like this feud, this story has been pretty well botched to me. Like there was a decent story with them and Hangman and Kenny. There was actual motivation. There's stuff there, but they had FTR showed up on Dynamite. They had this little kind of mutual respect grudging thing with the Bucks for a little bit, and then it just kind of disappeared. And then the rest of the build so far has been based off of the dream match from a couple years ago, Desire. And then we get this really weird feud where neither of them is really a face, because no one wants to cheer for FTR. They are decidedly heel at this point. The Bucks were face and then had a really weird heel turn, and then that heel turn kind of got abandoned, and now it's like they're trying to play them up for sympathy, which no one really seems to have because they're just shitheads. So there's no storyline where you want to see what you're cheering for one of them because you think one team deserves to win or one team has a better story. It's literally just a match. It's just a dream match. I mean, yeah, the belts are involved, but it's really just a match based on, you know, a desire from a couple years ago.
I think it also depends on where it goes in the card. Because if it's co-main event, let me tell you, well, and it probably won't be co-main event because you would put Mox at the main event. So maybe co-main event behind, and then you put Omega and Paige after. It could really set up an interesting thing where Omega and Paige could be there for the Bucks, because we had that this past week on Dynamite, and then it kind of dissipated. You could have that moment again, and then it boil over just into them fucking starting their match.
It could be
just an interesting transition that we don't typically get in wrestling, where it's just a slap bang into another match.
I guess the fear that I have is that AEW's tag scene is always going to be good. They're putting enough focus on it that you're always going to get quality out of it. There's too many good tag teams for them to not get quality out of it. However, I think the shine's come off of FTR at this point a little bit, and really for the Bucks as well. And I think the idea that they're pitching this angle where they won't challenge for the titles again if they lose is kind of evidence to that, because they know it's not really been a worthwhile story so far. You don't add something like that last minute for no reason. And I think the reasoning is because that match is falling flat without it.
Well, unfortunately, it's interesting though, because it means the Bucks have to win, and if they don't, then they're just Cody again. And now you,
and which
now
to
you
me
have
tells
an
me
the- obvious thing going where. If you're an EVP, at some point you're going to tell us that you're not going to go for the title. We get it, and you're probably going to lose that match. We get it. It becomes predictable. So
see,
it almost
to me, it's to me, it's almost the predictable in the opposite way. Like, there's no way that they're not going to lose the titles here. They Bucks have to win this year, because otherwise, the major draw to your tag division can no longer challenge for the titles, really. And they've already done that angle once already, and Dynamite's only a year old. You know, it's really going back to the well really quickly. So I think it really foreshadows a Bucks win a little on the nose, which unfortunately takes some of the drama out of it a little bit more.
Well, maybe they're going to totally swerve us, and this is where we get the Bucks breaking up.
I don't think so, but what I do think, I think that Matt Jackson's knee is probably worse than what we are being told, or worse than what he is letting on.
See, I think
so. We may not get much
of
a match.
He's working it because he's a master of working injuries.
Maybe
he literally worked everybody so hard, like Wrestle Kingdom 10 and 11 in their matches with these. Oh my God, he's so hurt. His back is hurt. His knee is hurt. His ankle was hurt. You know, he's good at selling injuries. And the longer you put an injury in people's minds and have, you're trying to fix. You're trying to fake out the smart marks like us. And
I don't know. Like, to me, I never really bought it, just because I thought it was in response to a criticism from Alvarez and Meltzer. The whole back thing at Wrestle Kingdom.
Okay.
The knock against them was that they never sold in their matches, so Matt Jackson just decided to sell that back for every freaking match for like a year. I never really bought into it. I thought it was just because he was, they said he couldn't sell, so now he's going to sell everything. But just to get back to the point really quickly, I think the Bucks win. I don't think it's a long match. I don't necessarily think it's going to be that great of a match. If Matt's knee is actually hurt, I don't foresee them really trying to go their normal Broadway epic match. And unfortunately, if the Bucks don't win, it's blowing a dream match for little result, little reward, I think. I think that's a shame.
And if they win, another thing that's interesting to note about the possibility of the Bucks winning the titles here, it will set their feud and actually propel them, because FTR is not going to be satisfied losing the titles. And then the great question is this. You have FTR with Tully. You have Sean Spears with Tully. That's three of four.
They really need to do something with that.
It's going to be Hangman. Hangman's going to lose. Kenny's going to go off for the title. And we're going to get a fucking legit heel turn out of Hangman that's going to see him on a different level. And one thing that's going to happen, here's my thought. Tully's going to make him stop drinking, which is going to make him angrier. And we're going to see a more aggressive Hangman on the other side of this in a stable that actually knows how to utilize him. Not to say that he was bad in the Elite, but it was more like a, hey, you're our friend, you're cool, you're going to get popular. We want you to be popular. Join our Bullet Club group where you'll be popular.
I'm going to go the complete opposite way from that, man. I got to say, as I don't think there's any way on God's green earth they're turning Hangman heel. They just turned Kenny heel, and that's their feud. That is the feud.
That's that's true.
That's where they're going. I think you have Kenny to transition from the tag match to the Kenny and Hangman feud. I think you have Kenny win. I think you end up having Kenny take the title off of Moxley, truthfully. But I think you have Kenny win, and you have Hangman not just get angry, but Hangman get drunk, handle it poorly, and have to claw his way out of that to go get Omega. To go get his thing. He's already had the character, the drinking established. That's already a problem. Let's lean into it now. You know, give him that arc. Give him that long burn story that they're already working on.
Sure.
But I think they know the money match, the eventual money match, is Hangman Omega for the belt. And you don't get there with Hangman as a heel. because you're not going to run Hangman and Omega both as heel versus heel. And they just turn Omega.
Sure.
So I think, honestly, I think what you're going to get a good match between the two of them, between Kenny and Omega. I keep saying Kenny and Omega, but between Kenny and Hangman, I think you see Kenny win pretty viciously. Like, I think you'll have Hangman and going blow for blow and then just not being able to keep up with the brutality of cleaner Kenny. I think you'll really start to see the old school cleaner V-trigger after V-trigger after V-trigger style matches come back. And I think that's the same Kenny that's going to go out and take out Moxley. You'll have Omega run... you'll have Omega run roughshod for a while, and then you'll have Hangman finally taking the title off of someone, and off of not just someone, but off of the former partner, off of the big heel, his crowning moment, as it were. You might even say his coronation.
Okay. So let's see. Let's recap this a little bit so far, just for our listeners, make sure we got this right. We've covered the AEW... or the NWA Women's title match. We're talking about the Bucks match. We've got the Kenny and Hangman match. What else is on this card? I know we've got an amazing AEW title match that we can talk about.
You have John Silver and Orange Cassidy.
Yes. Which amazing.
Will be fun. It should be a great match. They've had great matches on Beyond, but there really isn't much in the way of story.
Doesn't have to be. John Silver is on his way to being the top babyface in the entire company. No, you mark my words. He's so good at being funny and not taking it too seriously while still delivering. And when he needs to have a vicious side, he has a vicious side. I think John Silver, as you have said, is a really, really bright moment. And you know what? At first, when you were like, I'm here for the John Silver face turn, I was like, okay, yeah, maybe that would happen. But now I'm like, it needs to happen. It would be great, and I'm here for it.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I still predict the John Silver face turn. However, I don't see it at the expense of Orange Cassidy.
Oh, no way. You're not going to do it this early.
No, no. What I think it's going to be, I think, is you have OC beat him, and then you have, in a great match, then you have him going to Brody Lee and Brody Lee being disappointed and hating him and, you know, beating up on him and whatever that Brody Lee does for losing. And I think you just play with that for a little while longer until you have Silver snap and go after Brody. That's my face turn.
Love it.
That's what I want to see. I want to see John Silver as the hero that takes down the Dark Order.
Oh, my God. He can be somebody that reforms the Dark Order, like a Scientologist that leaves Scientology and starts a new group that's cooler and less judgmental and worried about money and shit.
With cocaine and hookers, with beer and hookers, and then you know what? Screw that. Just the beer, just the hookers. That's how I would fantasy book it. I don't know if that's what they're doing or not. I don't think you have him lose, or I don't think you have him beat Orange Cassidy just because you want to keep Cassidy hot for being the star that he is right now.
We also talked about that. I want to just clarify, we also did talk about MJF Jericho.
Right.
There's another match, bro. My brain is hurting to think about what it is. The Cody Darby match. Shit.
Yeah. There's the Cody Darby match. The other three matches on the card are Cody Darby, the women's title, and... the Moxley Kingston. Of those three, this might surprise you. The only one that I give a shit about is the Mox Kingston match.
Oh, I'm not surprised. That promo this past week was like the great. Like we're recording a little bit late from what we typically record, so I don't say that so much.
I don't say that so much as a positive thing about Mox Kingston. Although I do believe that's amazing. Yes. But I say that it's the only one I give a shit about because I don't care about the other two matches.
I think the Darby Cody will be great. They have history and good chemistry together.
But it's completely unnecessary. There's no build to it at all. None.
Right now, you need that. Right now, you need a little monotony for Cody because he just got the title back. If you throw him directly into a storyline, I think they kind of actually, and you want my real opinion, I think they
backed into one this week.
What's up?
They backed into a storyline this week, but it's too little too late for me. Truthfully, yeah. If you want my opinion, I think they should have waited to do the second Orange Cassidy match and done that at Full Gear.
And then had Cassidy actually win?
No. Even if you don't plan on taking the belt off of him, it's still a feud that has a payoff.
See, I think Cassidy should have won the title. I think he'd be a great TNT champion.
And I do too. But I don't necessarily think it had to be. I think you could have easily had Cody win it the same way, not changed a damn thing, and he'd probably still be fine. But it's a match that deserved to be on the pay-per-view versus the Darby match that has no build to it whatsoever. He was just given a title shot. Orange Cassidy had a match earned with a storyline behind it. They threw it away on a Dynamite. Now you got versus Darby that up until this past Wednesday had no real animosity, no real build other than, oh yeah, they fought to a draw once. It's Darby's character right now is not really connecting with anything. His character is he jumps off of shit. He's Jackass the Wrestler. And he was just given a title shot against Cody. Cody just said, hey, you're up there. I'm gonna give you a challenge. That's great. An open challenge for the title, that's great. Do that on Dynamite. Do the storyline with some build on the pay-per-view. Or hell, do the fight with Orange Cassidy on the pay-per-view and then do Darby the next week on Dynamite. Great match. But
do you think, they're going to crown Darby and that's why they're going about it this way?
Maybe, but it feels like it's not earned. That's the thing, is it doesn't...
I guess I don't, not to be contrarian to you, my friend, but I kind of disagree. I think that Darby had, early in Dynamite's run, a lot of really impressive matches.
He did.
And I think he's one of those guys who got shuffled into a really weird... trying to make Brian Cage this maniac monster to prove a point, which is fine. Brian Cage needs to show his power. I just think you do it against someone a little bit closer to your own size, so it actually makes some fucking sense. And Darby had to play into that role, and then him and Ricky kind of had a thing, and he brought Ricky and elevated him into the level. So now it's almost like, okay, Ricky Starks is primed. You're, essentially, what I feel like they're using Darby is the guy that is building the mid-card. He is the guy that, with Cody being the champion, he's going to be the stalwart that, even if he's not champion, someone's going to have to go through Darby to prove that they deserve to move right up the ranks.
So here's, I see where you're getting at, and I understand that. And I think that they were riding a wave with Darby at the very beginning. People didn't know who he was, and he came out like a ball of fire. And truthfully, I think they should have put him, I thought that's who should have won the TNT title initially, not Cody.
Sure.
But since then, his character has no development whatsoever. He hasn't cut a promo at all, practically. He just does these weird little vignettes that no one really understands and gets in these weird spots where it looks like he gets hurt. But he doesn't have a character. He's brooding emo pants guy that rides a skateboard and takes body bag bumps and loses. And his character has been that he loses the big one. Now, there's storyline credibility to be gained by having that story of he finally wins the big one, but you need to build up to that. You need to have him get that big one. You need to have him earn that big one and put him in a position where he knows he's in that big match.
Not just okay, so I'm going to throw a curveball at you.
Well, hold on.
Oh, good.
Because you mentioned the you had him feud with Taz, you had him feud with Ricky Starks. That feud with Taz isn't done yet. He still hasn't had a match against Taz or a match against Cage. That feud's still completely up in the air. They just kind of petered away from it.
And that's actually going to lead into my next thought, because what if Brian Cage, due to the worked shoot promo that Taz cut this past week on Dynamite, what if he takes out Darby before the pay-per-view and we find, like, because that's the thing they do. Oh, so-and-so got hurt, and they can't do the match. Now what are we going to do? And then Ricky Starks kind of steps into that role, and it actually lends credence to the story. Yeah. And Cody becomes kind of the back character to the story while that storyline really gets to play out and have the prominence.
I don't think so. I think you're getting really overcomplicated with it. No offense.
Sure.
Like, I think, honestly, if you have Cage take out Darby, then you're invalidating Darby at all. Like, you've put a little build into him now for nothing. You wouldn't have Cage go over Cody, because that gives Cody A, a short run, and B, it just kind of catapults Cage around very quickly without doing anything with the Darby feud. Truthfully, what I think they should have done, if you want to be completely honest, here's the card I would have booked with the two of them. Have Orange Cassidy fight Cody for the TNT title, and have Cage and Darby fight at the pay-per-view.
There you go.
Blow off the feud there. And if you want to have Darby, say you have, and you know, ostensibly you're going to put Darby over, because Darby needs to go over in a feud at some point. And going over Cage is probably should be the end game of that feud.
Agreed.
You take that, then the next week have Darby challenge Cody on Dynamite for the TNT title and win it.
Yes. Simple.
All of it, simple. But they've just gotten really weird and cute with, they've really have kind of stopped and started with Darby. They haven't given him any kind of development. Cody getting the title back after taking a couple of weeks off to go film a talent show. It feels really hot potatoed with the Brody Lee thing. It's really weird. It feels like it's either A, too soon to take the belt back off of Cody, or B, it doesn't feel like it was soon enough. I don't know. But either way, the story, this match at Full Gear has no story to it to make me want to care to begin with. Like, I don't want to see Darby in that match. I wanted to see Orange Cassidy. I want to see somebody that actually, you know, was invested in getting that shot. Rather than... And the other sad thing is that right now they're talking about, there's rumors that you're going to see a debut at Full Gear, and it might be Sting.
Or Sting, there's another name I've heard, but continue.
Well, they're rumoring that it might be Sting, because all Sting's stuff has come off of WWE's website. Like, even his memorabilia, even his legend stuff is off. And all the stuff that Darby's doing is very Sting-esque.
Sure.
Sitting up in the rafters and crap. So if, let's say you throw Sting out there with Darby, you're completely overshadowing Darby again.
Because it's another legend that's taking his... It's WCW syndrome all over again.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it WCW syndrome. It's just somebody that's bigger focus.
Sure.
So it's just this weird, like... That feud is just really thrown together for me. The tag title feud's lost a lot of steam. The women's feud's barely existent.
What feud?
Yeah.
And I mean that literally. I know Nyla and Hikaru have a match, and it's essentially the rematch for the title, but the way they've gone about doing it and the time they've taken to make that rematch even happen is non-point at this point.
There's no time taken into it whatsoever. All it was that, okay, we're going to put Nyla with Vicky, and then we're going to disappear for a few weeks. And then Vicky's going to say, Nyla's not going to wrestle until she gets another match or another title match. And then they just disappear. And then she gets another title match, and suddenly it's a feud. No, I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I don't care. You have not given me reason to care. They haven't given us reason to care about their women's division in forever anyway. They're not really putting that much effort into the women's division. So, point of fact, there was something on Cage side where when the last match on Dynamite, the Nyla Rose versus Red Velvet. Literally, yes. In the article, when they announced that match, said, this is going to go on probably about 9:30, and it'll last about 5 minutes. And guess what?
9:30, and it lasted
5 minutes. Well, no, it lasted 5 minutes with the Vicky Guerrero promo.
Oh, yeah.
So it got a five-minute segment. It's so slapdash thrown together. And then you get Cody saying that. Did you see Cody's comment about that the other day or yesterday? I think it was.
I don't think so.
I'm not going to look it up here, but Cody was talking about in response to the lack of build for that feud or for that match. He says, "Well, sometimes you just have matches because they're matches. You don't have to have a long build storyline for every feud. We don't have to have War and Peace for every feud, for every match." You know, I know people have been conditioned to that by WWE, but we don't have to have that. I'm like, okay, dude, you're right. You don't have to have that, but you haven't given any feud for any of these women's title builds, so you're kind of sounding really disingenuous. And nobody's asking for War and Peace. We just want a reason to watch the match.
Yeah, I feel like they need to find balance within their women's division and figure out a way to tell some meaningful story and do something to move it. I hope
they need to do
that. Allison Kay joining the ranks, if she does decide to do that, is going to be a game changer. And if Thunder Rosa as well, then you have really, you've built a very sizable now division. You've got Chris Statlander healthy on her way back. You've got, you know, hopefully with the way certain things are happening in our world, we are, you know, not too far away from the end of coronavirus really affecting our day to day. I think, a couple months away from.
I think they need to do two things.
Sure.
They need to do two things before they can address anything else in the women's division. They need to take Kenny Omega off of booking. If he is still doing the booking, they need to get him off of that. And in order to do that, the first thing they need to do is admit that they have a problem. And they haven't shown any. Cody's statement there is indicative of the fact that they don't act like they've got any kind of a problem. The single biggest knock on AEW right now, if you look at message boards, you look at Twitter, the biggest knock against AEW is how their women's division is a joke. They don't take it seriously at all. They don't put any effort into booking feuds. They give it very little time. The feuds are thrown together at best. The rankings are a joke. Now, I know that coronavirus has an effect on it. I know the quarantine has an effect on it. I know injuries have an effect on it. We've talked about the fact that their division's full of a lot of really green people. We've talked about that before. But that can all be overcome with creative writing and effort. And they've done neither of those two things. And the effort is more damning because any time that they've been called out on it, you get something like what Cody said, where it's like, well, they just don't listen. I don't think it's really a problem. We're just having the match to have the match. That's the important thing. It's the match, right? Or Kenny, who's doing the booking essentially, is coming out and saying, well, I think we have a great division. What do you mean we have a bad division? We have a great women's division. It's full of great people. Yeah, it is full of great people, but you're doing nothing with them. And until they get that through their heads that they need to do something with them, they need to write compelling stories, they're going to be secondary to every other. They're going to be secondary to Impact. They're going to be secondary to NXT. They're going to be secondary to even the dog shit that we get on the WWE women's roster sometimes.
Because at least there's some story. Even if the story is for the next 5 years, Lana going through a table.
Right. But, there's just nothing. And then they have that weird, defensive, we don't really have any kind of an issue. Until they get that through their heads, they're not fixing anything. Now, I do think they have the possibility of having a good roster for all the things that you just mentioned. Allison Kay is a great addition. They will get Statlander back at some point, even though she is still a little green on her own end. They're not going to get Bea Priestley back. She's doing New Japan now. So they really need to make use of what they have and make use of it creatively and actually put some effort into it. And then maybe they'll start to see some turnaround. But until they do, they're just going to get comments back that they're just going to ignore. For a company that claims to always listen to the fans, and for the most part they do. But when the women's division comes to, they have a blind spot. They don't listen to anybody on it. It's sad.
No, they just know they have good talent, but they just haven't quite figured out how to get the gears turning. Maybe they have a long-term plan that we don't know, Rio, is she stuck because of COVID?
Maybe. I would assume so.
Okay.
But I would assume that's the case as to why she's not back. But even then, that's only one person. And they didn't, all they did was, in terms of feuding, she never cut promos. You have no idea what her character is other than she's small. The only feud they really booked was her versus Nyla, and all of the feud was big versus little. So, I mean, even with Riho, it was a novelty more than really building a feud.
Yep.
And you can argue that the reason that Riho got the push is because she's Kenny's former tag partner. So it's really, the only time they put any effort into character development or selling a feud in the women's division was the big swole Britt Baker thing. And if that's got a payoff, sure, because we haven't seen Britt Baker in the last 3 weeks. We haven't seen Swole at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's... as much as I enjoy AEW, their women's division is the worst part of the show, and they're not making any effort to fix it. At least not making conscious effort to.
Anyways, Nyla Rose is going to win. That's my pick.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think that Hikaru is doing a good job holding the title, but it's not moving the gears because you can't put all these talented people up against her because you have so many face women in the company right now. And I hate to say it, but there's nothing better than chasing Nyla with that title.
Here's the thing. Do I think Nyla is going to win? Maybe. Do I think Sheeta's going to win? Maybe. There's pros and cons to each one of them. You're right. There is more money in the faces of the division chasing Nyla. However, their faces right now consist of Hikaru Shida and Serena. Maybe.
Okay.
So who else do you have? So maybe are you going to have Shida chasing her again?
Allison Kay, maybe.
Oh, I guess Swole. Swole's a face. I guess you can have Swole go after her.
Chris Statlander could return.
I'm talking about if they have her win now.
Oh, gotcha.
Statlander's got a while yet. She's still on crutches. So, you know, maybe there is money in having a big Swole go after Nyla, but Swole's still pretty green herself. So you're going to get better match quality out of Sheeta. You can put Sheeta up against anybody and get a decent match. You're not necessarily going to get that with Nyla. So maybe there's more money in the feud and in the chase of somebody coming after Nyla if they actually allow her to have some character development. Sure. Maybe there's more money in Sheeta keeping the title so that she can have banger matches here and there with good people. Maybe they keep the belt on Sheeta and, you know, bring in Allison Kay for a title shot, you know, signed or unsigned. But in the end, who wins? Who cares? Does it make a difference who wins at this point? I know that sounds really harsh, but...
No, I think it's fair.
The build hasn't given us reason to care, so why should the winner? Really, the likelihood is that whether or not you have a title change or not, you're not going to get a change in the status quo. I hate saying that. I really do. And moving on to something I will say a little bit better about, the Moxley-Kingston feud has been amazing.
Five-star home
run. Flat out amazing. And the only downside to that feud is that it's going to end. Unless by some trick or magic, you find a way to get Eddie out of the match to lose the match without saying I quit, that feud ends here.
What if Eddie wins though?
I don't know how you would get. I don't know how you can justify Eddie winning. I love Eddie Kingston. Don't get me wrong. He is one of my favorite people to watch on AEW. I love the guy.
Best promo in the game, highly underrated, underutilized in every company he's been in up and until AEW, his first official world title shot, I quit match against one of his best friends.
Well, no, he got a title match against Moxley originally. Title match. He took Archer's match.
Oh, that yeah, that's match. Right. That's right, because he never got thrown out of the thing.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't tap out or pass. The idea was he didn't get pinned and didn't tap out. He passed out.
That's right.
That's how they got to the I Quit match. So it's not his first title match either. That's the thing. It's sad because the feud it shouldn't be an I Quit match. That's the only downside is you can't really extend it past the I Quit match. And it deserves to be extended. This feud deserves to go longer. Unfortunately, they've kind of booked themselves into a corner where Kingston's going to come out not looking any worse for saying I quit, but he's at that stopping point in the feud where you're not really going to have a justification for another match after that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, sure. Like I said, I get it.
So it's really the only downside is this is probably the stopping point of the feud. Because otherwise it's hitting on all cylinders and it's going to be amazing.
I love that we're talking about Full Gear and you said it's going to hit on all cylinders. It's just...
Yeah.
Perfect.
I think... I don't know how you get... I don't know how you take the belt off of Moxley, for one.
You just Moxley deserves it.
They deserve to have Moxley deserves to have a crowd more than anybody else. He's carried that and he's made that belt relevant with having no crowd whatsoever. You have to do that. If you're going to do the title change, you have to do it in front of a crowd.
I mean, they've started to have little crowds though. I mean, I know it's not full scale, but
I know. So I'm saying like I talked about earlier on the show, the end game is Omega getting the title. And on the one hand, Omega taking the belt off of Kingston makes it more likely. Like, yeah, you can believe him taking the belt off of Kingston. However, that's a heel versus heel feud, which nobody really wants to see. And it's a disservice to Kingston to make him a transitional champ. Whereas if you go until, I guess, Revolution will be the next pay-per-view, Moxley Omega, you know, a little over a year after their lights out match, now for the belt, now it's the cleaner, not just Kenny. You probably have a better chance of having a crowd then in February than you do now.
True.
That's where you do the title change, and then you go on to Hangman.
for Double or Nothing, you have it Hangman.
I don't know if I would do it for Double or Nothing. I would probably give it one more. I'd give a Moxley a rematch, most likely. And then probably All Out.
Okay.
Have a Hangman. If they can drag the feud out, because now we're talking probably August of next year. But all the same. Even so, the match between Moxley and Kingston should be a banger regardless.
I couldn't agree more. I don't think we have any other headlines for AEW, do we?
No, I really don't.
Well, let's breeze through the next few things. I know WWE hasn't been doing it too much, but there is indie news that's pretty important I think we should get to at some point. No idea what your game plan is, so I'm just riffing.
I don't have a whole lot, to be brutally honest, because WWE has been so completely boring. Raw this past week, I'm going to come right out and say it. Survivor Series is stupid. Everything about Survivor Series right now, other than the Undertaker thing, is completely pointless. The whole idea of competing for bragging rights with nothing at stake means nothing. Like, oh, great, we're having champion versus champion. Okay, I don't care.
Nothing matters. Yeah, nothing is going to even happen from this. What storylines can you really tell from champion versus champion?
No.
It's just the revolving door of confusion.
Yeah. You're going to get a champion versus champion match out of Reigns and Randy Orton that, who cares? Neither of them can really afford to lose, but sure, whatever. There's two compelling stories on WWE right now. I'm not going to touch on the Mysterio thing just because it's just strange and I don't care for it, but like we finally got a kiss between Aaliyah Mysterio and Murphy. And then they had this weird thing today where Murphy kind of went back with Rollins. I'll be honest with you. I was barely paying attention to SmackDown tonight. The only other compelling feud really is The Fiend and Twisted Bliss is interesting. They're not really feuding with anybody in particular yet, but they're interesting. They're fun to watch. The only compelling feud is Reigns and Uso, which is no longer a feud now because Uso has kind of made a somewhat heel turn.
He's fallen in line. He's almost the Rey Mysterio of the LWO right now.
Yeah. WWE is just weird. And right now, I hate to say it, but we went through, and I didn't get to talk last week with you about Hell in a Cell, but we had a great Hell in a Cell match between Bayley and Sasha, and then a pretty decent title match between them tonight. And you know what? I didn't give a shit about either of them. Because they blew the feud off. They did exactly what I was afraid they were going to do. They blew the feud off tonight. They had a WrestleMania feud that they built for 5 years, and they could have blown off the biggest stage possible, and they blew it off on Hell in a Cell, and then they completely closed the book on it tonight.
Really? They closed it?
Yeah. Sasha won clean and then got attacked by Carmella to start that feud.
Huh.
So they are officially getting away from Bayley and Sasha at this point.
Interesting.
Which is a massive, massive waste to me. Not to say the matches were bad. The matches were great, both of them. But they took a story that they stopped and started and they could have built and they needed to build for 5 years. And they had a chance. Do you tell me how that doesn't either main event or co-main event a WrestleMania, if you build that correctly, if you continue to work that storyline?
It should have.
Yeah. But no, you put them on the same show and then you blow the title off at a, you know, title blowing match or a feud blowing match with Hell in a Cell, not because that's when the feud needed to end, but just because you had October, the end of October coming up, you have to do a Cell match. It's just, it's wasteful. The whole thing was a waste and I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate the fact that Carmella is the one that attacked her. I don't care. You know, I should care because Carmella's gotten vignettes and she's supposed to be interesting, but because she's involved in this waste of a story, I don't care. Maybe it's just because maybe I'm getting the sense here that I'm just a little negative and angry these days. I don't know. But I'm finding it harder and harder and harder to have appreciation for some of this stuff when I feel like I'm being insulted by it.
Well, because they are insulting us. It's awful. Like, we don't really need to go into it at all. Spend more than any time in it.
I went into it with AEW, too. So, I mean, it's not like they're safe either.
Yeah.
And then, did you touch last week? Did you go over Halloween Havoc?
No, because I didn't watch it. I didn't see it. Okay.
I would recommend, actually, on a bright note, Halloween Havoc was actually a lot of fun.
Okay, really, I think it's just interesting that every time they have to beat AEW in the ratings, it's because they bring an old pay-per-view from WCW back from the dead.
Yeah. Slamboree coming soon. Now Halloween Havoc was fun. Halloween Havoc was a lot of fun. They had a fun match, an ODQ match with, or I guess they called it a Devil's Playground match between Damian Priest and Gargano. Actually did the title change and put the belt back on Gargano. First two-time North American champion.
Nice.
They had a great little cinematic match between Cameron Grimes and Dexter Lumis. It was this basically the same as the House of Horrors match between Bray and Orton, only done right this time.
Cool.
And campy as hell and fun, and it worked really well for Lumis, and it worked really well for Grimes' goofy character. They had Shining references. There was all kind of like serial killer stuff in it. You had a fun match with EO and, or a brutal, I should say, TLC match essentially between EO and Candice LeRae, which Candice finished up by looking like she blew both of her knees out.
Oh my God.
She fell off the top of a ladder to the ringside area, through a ladder, knees first.
Oh my God.
It's a horrifying bump. Like, she basically does, like, a just knees down, jump straight down through the ladder. It looks horrible.
She didn't grasshopper like that indie guy, did she?
No. She went straight. No. Oh, God, no. I don't. God, don't make me even think about that. Jesus Christ. God damn. Snatch the leg braces from my hand, grasshopper. Yeah, I know. No, and there's also a really good Haas match between Raquel Gonzalez and Rhea Ripley. And all tied together with Shotzi Blackheart hosting the show and having costume changes and just really embracing the campiness that was Halloween Havoc. It was fun. The whole thing was a blast. Halloween Havoc, the show is definitely worth a watch. The other big angle in NXT right now is the Pat McAfee thing, who has now aligned himself not just with Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan, but also now Pete Dunne.
Ooh, interesting. He's building his own stable.
Yeah, essentially. And they wound up the Rich Holland thing into it, too. They said that he was the one that paid off Ridge to attack Adam Cole after the last takeover. And then when Ridge went out, he went out and got the guys that took out his guy in Oney and Birch.
Nice.
And then this past week on, last week on on NXT, Kyle O'Reilly came out to confront McAfee and Birch and Lorcan, and Pete Dunne came out with him with a chair to, you know, even the odds, and then Dunne turned on him.
Damn.
So aligned himself with McAfee. So you have a nice little faction brooding there. Although it's a little awkward considering I think Bobby Fish is legitimately out with an injury, so that might play a role in something.
Okay.
It's, you know, interesting timing that we're getting a faction built up and just in time for the War Games usually match.
Oh, I see what they did there.
We'll see if they actually get to do it because they can't fit the War Games structure into the current venue. So they may have to
move the War Games. Listen, here's what you do. Film the War Games match separately at Thunderdome, but
I'm thinking
not under Thunderdome rules where everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Do it close
set. I think it'll be something similar to that. But yeah, you got all kinds of interesting stuff. Ember Moon is back now. Tony Storm's back. We have not seen much of Finn Balor, so I don't really know what their plan is going forward there, if they're just going to continue to ignore the fact that he's hurt, or they're just letting him rehab and hoping nobody notices. Maybe they're going to take the title off. I don't really know. But NXT's not been bad. I haven't had a chance to watch this week's episode yet because, to be brutally honest, I've been doing nothing but watching CNN this week, so I haven't really been paying that much attention. I have completely forgot that it was on available last night, so I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, that kind of wraps up WWE. I don't want to spend too much time on WWE because it's just blech.
The drizzling shits.
Well, it's not even that. It's not so much that it's bad. It's just it's boring. There's no reason to really pay attention to WWE right now because you're building to a pay-per-view that doesn't matter.
Sure, fair enough.
So it's just like, yeah, I don't care. That's your episode title. Find a reason for Buckles to care. You had some indie news you wanted me to touch on.
You know what it is.
You're going to have to tell me because I am all over the place right now.
It's the biggest storyline of the month, in my opinion. And it's Kylie Rae retiring from wrestling.
Ah, yeah. Yes, I'm remiss that I didn't specify that. Kind of came out of nowhere. We actually talked about it briefly, indirectly, a couple weeks ago when you were referring to, or you talked about last week on the show, rather.
I did talk about it last week when I covered Bound for Glory.
You did on the solo show because you talked about the Bound for Glory no-show.
Yep.
And at the time, there was a report that maybe she was hurt, and they were being hush-hush about it. And then there was a report that, no, she wasn't hurt, but they kept her off the show. And then there was a report that she wasn't hurt, and she no-showed, but there was some goodwill towards it. And nobody really knew much. Nobody could really figure out what was going on. Maybe it was a work. But then we got a tweet from Kylie saying that, A, you know, in all, you know, in bold terms, I'm not well right now. I am not well. And I am no longer a professional wrestler until such time that I, you know, am happy with myself again and I need to find some positivity in my life. And that was kind of it. Like, the outpouring of emotion to her from a lot of other people, even people like Bailey, for God's sake, who I never really thought about. A lot of people that had gotten to meet her, nothing but love shown for her, and, you know, hope and good vibes and good feelings for her. And I hope to God that she got to see it. Because apparently she shut her social media down, so I'm hoping that she got to see it.
I hope so too. I do feel like it's possible the episode title could be called Kylie Lost Her Smile because it's factual.
It is, but I at the same time I think I wouldn't want to mess with that. I would just want to leave it alone. Let it be what it is.
Well, yeah, and I want to touch on it for a minute because I think that this is something that doesn't get talked about, not just in the wrestling world, but like in the world at all. is that sometimes people are living in an existence where you're like, oh my God, they're a star, they're a celebrity, they have it so good. And literally they're living with themselves and they're their own worst enemy.
I mean, they're as human as the rest of us.
Exactly. And like sometimes your own demons are impossible to face, even when you're in the best position. It's not about money. It's not about anything like that. And Kylie has had opportunity after opportunity, you know. It's kind of a, I'm going to say it weirdly, it's a blessing that she didn't sign with AEW, and that she was kind of in her own trajectory and can make the decision. Because I think if she was in AEW, she would feel almost obligated to push through.
Well, hard to say. I mean, it's hard to say because maybe there's somebody in the locker room that she knows that that would be a better environment for her. There's a lot of guys from Beyond and from BLP that are on AEW now. So maybe there's more people that she's familiar with there. Maybe it would have made a difference. Truthfully, we don't know enough about why she left or what's causing it to know what would have helped her, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
It's hard to say, you know, it's hard to say what could help if we don't know what the problem is. And we may never know what the problem is. Yeah. Mostly because we don't need to. It's not our place to.
Fair point.
But the only thing you can really do is just hope for her.
Well,
you know, you hate to lose her as a wrestler because she is, to me, one of the best women's wrestlers on the planet. But being the best women's wrestler on the planet pales in comparison to being a healthy and happy person.
It pales to being a breathing human.
Right.
Because the alternative for her, you know, we don't know her mental state, like you said, but you sent me the message there was some bad news about Kylie, and my brain kind of went dark, unfortunately, because I had heard rumors and rumblings, and there was kind of this whole thing with her not showing up at the pay-per-view. People thought something terrible had happened. But then her decision to walk away, I think, is very brave, and I do hope that she finds the clarity in her life she's looking for.
Right. Really, I'll just flat out say that if she's happier than not being a pro wrestler, then I want her. I'd rather see her be happy than be a pro wrestler. So whatever she does in her life, whatever she needs to do to find that happiness, I hope for the best for her.
Absolutely.
She brought a lot of happiness to a lot of people, so she absolutely deserves to find her own. And that's really what needs to be said.
Hell yeah, man. I think
she deserves to be as happy as the people that she made happy.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. So, Buckles, I think there's only really one thing left for us to talk about before we get out of here today, yeah?
I do, and really this was supposed to be on last week's show. I did promise a top 10 at the end of the week, or at the end of the month, and it was going to be a whale of a top 10 because there's a lot to go through with it. And unfortunately, I didn't even get to add as much to it as I wanted to. I mentioned on the last show that I did that I really wanted to watch some of the G1 stuff and make sure that I included that. And then before I had to miss last week's show, I even thought to myself, well, let's probably not do that. I wanted to make the G1 stuff separate. I wanted to do a separate list for it because it started prior to October. So it was a little bit outside of the time frame that I'd given. And really, there was so much there that I wanted to make sure that it got its own spot. And then, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch any of it. So I still haven't watched much of it. However, I did the usual of myself where I took in an unholy amount of wrestling over the course of October. And I have put together a top 10. And for those of you with this being the new season, I do want to change up one little thing, especially for weeks like this or months like this when I watch way too much to begin with to put together a list. In the past, I tried to rank them numerically, the top 10, like the best match that I've seen all month, or the best match I've seen this week or in recent memory, however long it was, but then have a ranking system based on the top quality matches. That, if I continue to do that, I'm going to burn my own brain out. So going forward, the top 10 is going to be just my top 10 in no particular order matches that I think you should check out. It's not
bingo,
necessarily the
love
best
it.
Matches.
Let's get to it.
So I do want to run down. I'm going to give you the top 10, and then I'm also going to give just a quick and dirty list of the other matches that were on the list because they all deserve a shout-out in their own right. But the top 10 that I would recommend from October, again, in no particular order, going down the list, I have Top Flight versus Violence is Forever from the Black Label Pro TurboGrafx tournament at the very beginning of the month. Violence is Forever, I've talked about it a couple times on the show before. Kevin Koo, Dominic Guarini, They are one of the best, if not my favorite, independent tag team right now. If you want a chance to watch them and don't have access to some of the indie shows, they are both signed by MLW and are both part of Team Filthy, so you will have a chance to watch them more soon. Top Flight, actually, I was not aware of until really the last month, or I guess I should say the end of September, when I caught them on a couple Black Label shows there. They really blew up at the Collective this year, and if I'm not mistaken, they've made an appearance on AEW Dark recently as well. So they may be moving up in the world themselves. They're a great young tag team, a lot of high flying, whereas Violence is Forever, as you might guess from their name, are more along the lines of beat the hell out of you strong style.
Sure.
And anytime you get a strong style versus a high flying match, you're going to have a good time. Those were a great match. Number two, I have Kyle O'Reilly versus Finn Balor from TakeOver 31. Another match that we've talked about on the show before. Kyle O'Reilly is unique right now, or very set on his own in NXT. He's very few work that really heavily grappling style that he does. Really, it's just down to Pete Dunne to an extent and then Timothy Thatcher. But O'Reilly is the best babyface out of a lot of them. And his match with Balor at TakeOver was a blast. You don't get to see midsection injuries get worked very often. You don't usually see multiple fractures to a jaw come out of a match. So the two of them just beat the hell out of each other, and it was a bloody good time.
They did not play around.
A lot of creative work. Moving on, AJ Gray versus ACH from the Collective, the Glory Pro Are Your Wrestling Son show. And this is the first out of a couple matches here that I'm going to mention where I tried to limit some of these matches to if I picked someone, I didn't want to pick one of their other matches as well. They only got one spot on the top 10. AJ Gray could have easily had three or four spots on this top 10.
Damn.
He had a fantastic Collective. If you haven't had the pleasure of watching an AJ Gray match, go do so. He is a workhorse that has done GCW. He's done, obviously, Black Label, Glory Pro. He's done CZW, death matches I've seen him in. But the fact is the guy is a workhorse that goes around to different promotions, works his ass off, and rarely has a bad match. And really, when you get to watch one of his matches, he's kind of got that Minoru Suzuki vibe where when the bell rings or when his music hits and he comes out, you know someone's getting their ass handed to him. Whether or not he wins or loses, someone's getting their ass kicked. And AJ is fun as hell to watch. And this match against ACH, who is in his kind of return tour to the Indies, the two of them have had a long series of matches or a long feud in the past. This is just the first time I've gotten to see the two of them together and put on probably one of my favorite matches of the Collective. If you can't tell, I'm a big AJ Gray fan. His lariats terrify me. I'm going to get a good laugh out of you. AJ Gray is very much a black man, and his lariat is called the BBL or the BBC, the big black lariat, the big black clothesline.
Oh, my God.
Something tells me you got the joke, and I don't need to progress further.
You don't have to progress further. That is hilarious. But,
I've sent you a couple links. The dude throws clotheslines and lariats like they are. He has the best lariat I've seen since JBL. Full stop. And that's high praise for me, so I love a good lariat. Next match I have on the list was Lee Moriarty versus Jonathan Gresham from Janela Spring Break 4. That is my match of the entire Collective. That is actually my number one match on this list, if I had to pick one single match. Lee Moriarty and Jonathan Gresham from Spring Break 4. Gresham, who literally just won the Ring of Honor Pure title, and a storyline that we haven't even covered, actually. Ring of Honor just finished up their tournament for their Pure title over the span of about a month, I think. And I need to go back and watch them because it's right up my alley. But Gresham is one of the premier grapplers on the planet. Works one of the best mat-based styles. Whereas Moriarty is another guy that really I've kind of watched for a while, and I've seen a few of his matches in the past, really enjoyed him, but he blew up at the Collective. He is a legitimate martial artist, can work any style necessary. He doesn't really look like much yet. doesn't really have much of a character other than being a hell of a fighter. He's not going to out brawl you, but he will strike and he will grapple you out of your fucking pants, which is a phrase I don't know that I've ever used before.
Hell yeah. He'll grapple you out of your pants.
Yep. There's your episode title. Grapple you out of your pants. But he and Moriarty and Gresham went on for probably 20 minutes. And it went from grappling chains to strikes to strong style to submissions. And I can't undersell you. It's one of the best matches I've seen this year. It was one of my matches I was looking the most forward to, and it's the one that paid off the most. So definitely get eyes on that. Also from spring break, Team Pazuzu, which is Proud and Powerful, Santana Ortiz, and Chris Dickinson versus Alex Zane, Blake Christian, Jordan Oliver. I've mentioned Zane and Christian before. There are two very young up-and-comers that have done some work with CZW. Both of them are actually currently on New Japan's American TV, the Young Lions Break or whatever they're calling it. Both of them have done a lot of work with BLP. Matter of fact, I think Blake Christian is next in line for a title shot there. Zane is one of my favorite guys to watch right now on the indies because he is very, very, very creative. He's been on my short list for someone to watch for a while and probably will be my next call out for that. But Christian is also a great babyface. Jordan Oliver is a member of Injustice on MLW, which I'm not even sure if that faction is still in existence. Another very young guy. He also had a very good match with Ace Austin this week or this month. But the three of them versus Team Pazuzu was kind of a old guard versus new guard in an extent. Kind of what you would see in New Japan where you have the older guys like... I'm blanking on names all of a sudden. The former like champions going out and kind of training with the Young Lions again. Your Makabes and your there's a term I'm looking for and I can't think of it. It's midnight here and my brain's fried. But it was very much kind of a passing the torch from old school to new school and the kind of the old guard of indies to the next generation, and they had it was a great match as well. Moving on, the AR Fox versus Too Cold Scorpio from the For the Culture show. We kind of hyped it up a little bit on the build up to the collective. Too Cold Scorpio is damn near 60 years old and is doing backflip leg drops.
Boom.
AR Fox is one of the best high flyers on the market. You know, not just in indies, but just in wrestling in general. AR Fox is a pioneer. So the two of them had a fantastic, fun match. Well worth the time, well worth the effort. It's worth the time just to watch Too Cold Scorpio still getting down. So fun, fun, fun. Next, we have Layla Hirsch versus Josh Alexander. Layla Hirsch, we mentioned, is the opponent of Sarita Deeb. She's getting a look at from AEW right now. I've watched her quite a bit through Beyond. She is a Russian amateur wrestler, but can do strong style and grappling with the best of them, as evidenced by this fight with Josh Alexander, who is one of the better strikers in the indies right now. And one of my favorite guys to watch is because his chops scare the hell out of me. I've mentioned that before. The two of them had a match at the Threat Level Midnight, the Black Label Pro show at the Collective. Fun as hell. Well worth the time to watch again. My last two matches, Reigns versus Uso at Hell in a Cell.
Hell yeah.
Mostly just because it took all the drama that was their first match at Clash of Champions, added it to the Cell. The Last Man Standing stipulation was the I Quit stipulation was a great touch. And then they somehow even managed to evolve a strap match into it too. And then badass. Finished it up by the swerve of having Jimmy or Jay protecting Jimmy instead of Jimmy protecting Jay this time. Just great match start to finish. You had high class acting from Reigns. Reigns is the top of the game right now as far as heels. He is killing his character, which to me comes off as a cross between not just Samoan, but Samoan mafia leader. There's a lot of like Godfather stuff I'm getting, like vibes coming off of his character, and I really love it.
Hell yeah.
There's a lot of, I think I've mentioned it before, but there's a lot of character bits and mannerisms from this character, this head of the table character, in his original FCW character, which was the Thoroughbred Roman Reigns, where he came out in a suit and was just treated like the, you know, the high-end professional athlete type, the blue chipper, and had a little bit of a kind of a stuck-up kind of mafioso vibe to it. There's some character bits he's using in this new character that echo back to that. I think that's really cool. Finally, I have two last matches. Filthy Tom Lawler versus Homicide at Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Very seriously, almost gave it. There's two other fights I'm going to get to from Bloodsport here in a moment when I go through the rest of the list. But I had to give if I was to pick one fight from Bloodsport, and I wanted to pick one from there, Tom Lawler and Homicide had the most fun match because of the clash of styles. Bloodsport, again, no ropes, no rope breaks, knockout or submission only. It is the kumite, essentially. Tom Lawler, being the former MMA guy, is built for something like that, whereas Homicide is just a street-style fuck-you-up guy.
Yep.
And the clash of styles was really, really cool to watch, culminating in Homicide literally stomping, unprotected stomping on the side of Lawler's head a few times.
Damn. So
just fun, brutal, nasty match. Well worth the time to check out. The last match on the top 10 is one that I would have usually pegged as a honorable mention, but in this instance, an honorable mention, this one deserves to be part of the top 10. It's the clusterfuck match from Spring Break 4. Just because it has to be seen to be believed. It's a rumble with the Invisible Man and with, you know, the guys from the Walmart videos and all this crazy, stupid, wild shit that happens in those matches. The clusterfucks are always fun. And you got so many people from the rest of the collective getting to have kind of a curtain call or a brief moment, like, I can't think of the name all of a sudden. Cassandro, the Exotico from the Effie's Big Gay Brunch, got a chance to show again out in that match. He had Marco Stunt and Logan Stunt feuding with each other. You have Violence is Forever coming out with Kevin Koo in a Super Dragon mask. It's a lot of fun. You have all kinds of different factions involved in it. Again, anytime you involve the Invisible Man, it's fun. Levi Everett, the Amish man, great gimmicks. It was like an hour-long rumble match, but well worth the time to watch. It's part of the reason you watch the Spring Break match, or show, I should say. So that's the top 10. And then just to really very, very, very briefly run down, I'm not even going to do descriptions of each, but just to list off the rest of them.
Sure.
Matches to watch. Christian Casanova, last month, someone to watch, versus ACH at TurboGrafx. Effie versus Tom Lawler versus All Ego Ethan Page and Alex Shelley at TurboGrafx. Josh Bishop versus Warhorse, TurboGrafx. Trey Lamar, Kevin Blackwood, TurboGrafx. Besties in the World versus To Infinity Beyond from TurboGrafx. Isaias Velasquez versus Alex Shelley from TurboGrafx. Obviously, if you haven't watched TurboGrafx, it's a good show. Go watch it. Swerve versus Escobar, TakeOver 31. Kushida Dream, TakeOver 31, made the list. From Effie's Big Gay Brunch, the Twink Gauntlet. I'm not going to explain it. It's a Twink Gauntlet. Effie versus Marco Stunt. Go watch it for the sex toys. Sunny Kiss versus Cassandro. Sunny Kiss's crowning glory against one of the original, I know I said I wasn't going to run these down, but original Exoticos. Sunny Kiss versus Cassandro is a legendary match. Go watch it. Jordan Oliver versus Ace Austin from Jimmy Lloyd's Degeneration F. The North versus Blake Christian and Alex Zane from Glory Pro, Are You Wrestling, Son? Manders versus Jake Something in a strap match, or a bull rope match, rather. from Are You Wrestling, Son. Rush versus ACH, Leo Rush, I should say, versus ACH from Spring Break 4 is great. Ricky Morton versus Janela, Spring Break 4. Trey Miguel versus JTG for the Culture. 40 Acres, which is Trey Lamar and PB Smooth versus Top Flight versus Culture Season, which is Christian Casanova's tag team for the Culture. Calvin Tankman versus O'Shea Edwards in a Hoss Fight from Hell for the Culture. AJ Gray versus Desmond Xavier of the Rascals. AJ Gray getting another great match for the Culture. Lee Moriarty and ACH, that was very nearly on the list and only didn't make the list because Lee Moriarty already had a match listed for the Culture as well. Another great show you should definitely take the time to go watch. From Threat Level Midnight, Anthony Henry versus Alex Shelley. Top Flight versus Team Filthy. And Violence is Forever in the tag title match versus the Besties in the World. All from Threat Level Midnight. From the Bloodsport show, Killer Kelly versus Allison Kay. Chris Dickinson versus John Moxley. Absolutely go check it out. And then a couple just randoms. Bayley and Sasha from Hell in the Cell. Even though I hate the build, I still love the match. Great match. And AEW Dynamite gets Phoenix versus the Penta El Cerro M match. The one where Phoenix almost kills himself.
Hell yeah. Well, not hell yeah that he almost killed himself, but hell yeah, that was a great match. And they're going to have a rematch next week.
Yes, they are, for no stakes, which is really odd. For no reason, they're going to have a match even though they're in the same feud or same faction. I'm not mad at it because it'll be a great match. Just very kind of confusing. But yeah, there is a long list of shows to watch. Again, if you haven't watched The Collective or you have access to The Collective, go check it out. You can find the shows individually on Fight TV. You can buy the whole thing at once. You're not going to go wrong with any of the shows, but there are some really great TV in there. TakeOver 31 was fantastic. Hell in a Cell was great. Well, let me rephrase that. Hell in a Cell had two or three great matches. The rest was okay. And I'm sure there's other stuff I'm leaving out, honestly.
It's a huge obviously,
month
for
I've
wrestling.
Watched a lot of wrestling, but I'm sure there's stuff I'm even forgetting. Point is, there's a lot of good wrestling out there, and you can find it if you go looking. I just hope I point you in the right direction.
Man, that's an awesome list. There were so many amazing matches. The Collective created kind of a wave, a tidal wave of matches for this month for you to cover. That's why the list is a lot larger.
Created a title. It also created a few other things, but that's kind of neither here nor there.
For true.
Yeah, they're. Let's just say that they were tempting fate by having a 3-day event in the coronavirus times, and they did kind of get bit for it. So it even reached out to affect even things like AEW when Joey Janela got pulled off of the Eliminator tournament. Yep. So it had its own issues. So, but yeah, a lot of good matches that I got to watch. Very happy to do so.
Hell yeah, brother. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode, unless I'm incorrect. Was there anything else we needed to dive into?
No, I think we're good. I'm going to try to come back with someone to watch for next week.
And
goal is to do a someone to watch at the beginning of the month and the top 10 at the end of the month. Actually, there was one other thing that you wanted to touch on, and that is a little announcement for the show.
Oh, I was getting to it. I'm glad you refreshed me, though, because I might have actually slipped out without saying it.
Gotcha.
Listen, folks, we've been doing Journey into Wrestling for a long time, and all good things come to an end, but not this show.
That's my sanity.
What's up?
So, no, the only thing that's coming to an end is my sanity.
Because we're picking up the pace. We told you guys when we started this season we were doing every week. We've had a couple days where we've been not necessarily released on a Wednesday. We're releasing here on now. It's going to be Saturday by the time you guys are getting this. But the point is, every week you're going to get new content because there's so much wrestling news happening all the time. That, coupled with the amount of seasons we've already done, made me kind of realize you guys probably don't want to listen to Journey into Wrestling Season 5, Episode 51. And then episode 52, and then the very next week be season 6, episode 1. It's just kind of silly to me. When we could just mathematically figure out where the fuck we are in the overall count of number of episodes for the show, lifetime, and make the conscious decision that at episode 18 of this season, which will be around February 3rd,
will actually not be episode 18. It will be episode 100, the 100th episode of Journey into Wrestling. We have some stuff planned, hopefully some surprises, some cool things we're trying to work out by the time we get there. But yes, as of 2021, this show will be numerical and will be the second Journey into show to reach at least 100 episodes, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
big
folks,
things happening.
What's up, Buckles?
I said big things happening.
Hey, you know it, my friend. Well, folks, as always, you know where you can find Journey into Wrestling, right here on the Journey into Comics Network at journeyintocomics.com. Get us on all the different podcasting platforms: Apple Music, Amazon Music, Podbean, Spotify, CastBox, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, many others. Just search Journey into Comics Network. Alexa, play podcasts by Journey into Comics Network. We'll be on your device in no time. I think that is absolutely going to do it for this week's episode, Buckles. I've been Nate. This has been Journey into Wrestling, Season 5, Episode 5, Grapple You Out of Your Pants. Again, I'm Nate.
I'm Buckles. Just as a reminder, wear your damn mask. Keep yourself safe.
Absolutely, folks.
And others.
And we'll talk to you guys on the other side of Full Gear. Later.